The Huddle, powered by Reuben James, Main Street in Burlington. Find them online at rjsburlington.com. Now, here's The Huddle, live on 101.3 ESPN, 101.3 ESPN.com, and streaming worldwide on the 101.3 ESPN app.
Good afternoon. You're in The Huddle, right here at 101.3 ESPN. I'm all accounted for.
What?
Brady's here, Rich is here, Artie's here. How you doing, Anson? What's going on, big boy?
You've been drinking before the show again?
Oh, don't I wish. Don't I wish, man. Jeez, a beautiful day here today. It's like 83, yeah. 84 degrees, sunny. I'm just tan as heck. Oh, it's just
right.
Great out here, you know?
Something tells me you burn before you tan.
Exactly.
Yeah. I do. You need to flip me over now is what you need to do. I'm going to have to wear my shirt when I play basketball. I'm just no longer pasty white anymore. So you'll see when I come into the studio and I take my shirt off, you'll see how tan I am.
Great. Well, that's certainly something to look forward to.
Oh, yeah, at least you got that. I got to tell you, you get used to 82 and sunny.
Yeah,
you know, when it drops below 70, you're like, what's going on here, man? What's happening? You kind of get used to that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean. We get used to that for 3 days in June, 4 in July, and 3 in August.
Yeah. And on a serious note, everybody do be safe out there. The northern New York and northern Vermont areas now issued a tornado warning tonight until 10 p.m.
Now, you're saying a warning, not a watch?
Which one's worse?
There's a huge difference.
Okay, I'm going to have to verify.
Sorry to call you out, because a tornado warning means I think that means it's imminent, doesn't it?
Well, okay, Sean Parker.
Sean Parker, come on now.
You're sending people down to their cellars all around Scroon Lake and Saranac Lake and...
A tornado watch.
Okay, that's a big difference.
Okay, sorry. I'm happy to report. It's... Quote.
It's like saying the bombs are going to drop. Oh, wait, the bombs aren't going to drop.
It's, quote, just a tornado watch.
Okay.
So there you go.
So in other words, it's going to be really windy in the North Country.
Yes.
All right.
Up to 80 miles an hour in some places.
Really? Why don't we go up and have a couple of beers on the top of Whiteface Mountain tonight? Can you imagine what it must be like up there?
Yeah, pure hell.
On the top of Mount Mansfield?
Well, there, too.
Exactly.
But,
I was walking around yesterday, Beverly Hills, of course, because, you know, I just kind of fit in there.
Yeah.
And I'm wearing a Vermont sweatshirt.
You were wearing a sweatshirt when it's 82 and sunny?
No, yesterday. This is yesterday.
Yesterday it was 82 and sunny.
No,
but it was a little chilly at night. It was a little chilly at night. Stop grilling me. It was like 70. It was a little chilly.
Work with me here.
Work with me here. It was a little chilly. So I'm wearing my Vermont sweatshirt. A lady comes up to me. She goes, do you live in Vermont? I said, yeah, I live in Burlington. She goes, I lived there 13 years. I go, where? She goes, Shelburne is where she was from for 13 years. Matter of fact, she said she owned the restaurant. I should have gotten the name of the restaurant. I should have gotten the name of the restaurant because they said that her and her husband had run it for the majority of 13 years or owned it. And when they divorced, they just got rid of somebody bought it or got rid of it. I'm not sure the whole story. But she's like, you know, I love Vermont. I love it. But I got to be honest, I don't miss those winters, man. She's been in Southern California for 10 years. And I go, well, you know, it does grow on you out there. But, man, she 13 years out in Shelburne, Rich. It was kind of funny.
Yeah,
she traded
traffic for weather, basically. I wonder if it was the old Sirloin Saloon, the late, great Sirloin Saloon, which was one of the best restaurants that closed down on Shelburne Road.
Wait, she did not trade traffic for weather. She traded something to get both traffic and weather.
Yeah.
She didn't trade traffic for weather. She acquired both of them and going to L.A.
There it is, the very first mistake of the day.
Yes. And this is your final chance to win that mistake of the day. Remember, that mistake of the day winner for the week, it's that 101.3 ESPN baseball cap, thanks to Embroidery Works at Joann's Uniforms in Colchester, helping small businesses with screen printing, embroidery, and vehicle lettering to get it right the first time. Arnie, I had a bit of an interesting moment yesterday. Kind of a I'm feeling old moment.
Do tell.
Did you?
So what's that going to make?
Jump up the stairs and split your head open again?
What's that make? What are we going to feel like?
Did I jump up the stairs and split my head? That was uncalled for.
Why? You said you had an interesting moment. What could be more interesting than that? That was funny as hell.
I finally heard on my 10-year high school reunion.
Oh, boy.
When it's happening and where it's going to be.
Oh, 10 years. I would die for that.
Do people go to the 10-year reunion?
Oh, I did.
Is that a good time? Is it lame? I don't even know.
I've not been to any of my reunions.
Well, that's probably because you didn't have any friends.
Yeah. You I had also, no friends. Yeah.
I didn't dare
true
say
too.
It.
Yeah.
No, but Rich.
That's true, though. I didn't have any friends in high school.
Hard
I mean,
to figure.
Yeah, I mean, I hung out with Stuart Hoffman and his brother Harvey Hoffman.
Harvey Hoffman.
And, yeah, think about that for a second. Stuart and Harvey and Arnold.
Harvey. Stu Harvey and Arnold.
Yeah, going out to pick up women in Westwood, and I have to say we were 0-4, and you're like, 0-4 years. That, 0-4 years picking up women in high school going to Westwood, so figure that, huh?
Is that a 70s sitcom come to life or what?
Stuart Harvey and Arnold do Westwood.
Arnold!
Yeah, and well, and of course, Stuart ended up becoming, and the funny part, I'll end the story on this, Stuart, who was a brain, of course. He went to the University of Pennsylvania, graduate school, orthodontal school, became a big orthodontist. And he goes, he tells me one day a long time ago, he goes, hey, come into my office for lunch. We'll go get lunch. I go into his office, and there must have been about a dozen of just beautiful women in there. And I'm like, Stu, what the heck is going on here? He goes, do you know where we are? He lives 3 miles from the porn capital of the world, Chatsworth. So all the porn stars who get their teeth done and have dental work go to my buddy Stu, and he's the dentist to the porn star.
You're
so
being politically incorrect. They're called
adult entertainers.
Adult film stars. So he's the dentist, the orthodontist, excuse me, to the adult film star.
Well, there's a guy who's made it in life. So let me guess. Stuart had curly hair, braces, and thick glasses.
No, Harvey had the thick glasses, straight black hair. And I think he was like 4'10". Stuart was at least 5'1". A little chunky. The full braces, of course, they eventually came off after like 12 years. And a brain. So there you, and I, of course, I was a moron. So Stuart always brought home A's. And I'd say, hey, just give me one of your A's. I'll just show it to my parents. They won't know. They would have no idea, man. That's what I had to go through.
Arnold.
So there.
So the 10, back to the 10-year reunion.
Yes, go ahead.
I don't know what to make of this because 10 years is not long enough that you've fallen out of touch with everybody. The people
right.
that I was really good friends with in high school, I still talk to now. So I could see them and just organize a group weekend and I'd be satisfied. Do I really need to go and go to the 10-year reunion to see everybody who I didn't talk to
yes.
then and still don't talk to now?
Yes, you have to see the people that you need to ridicule, people that amounted to nothing in life.
Who don't look as good as they did in high school.
Exactly.
Gained 20 pounds.
Exactly.
And
yes, exactly.
Lost their hair.
So,
you're a big radio star. So,
oh,
you know,
yes, big radio star.
The stories you can tell.
Oh, and that you just exaggerate, say you own the station. That's what I would do.
Yeah, there's a lot of lying that goes on
yeah,
at reunions.
Oh, tons of lying.
In fact, that's all it is.
Embellishing. Embellishing should be your middle name.
Yeah. So, again,
I'm Brady Embellishing Farkas.
So, again, it's not far enough away that I'm, you know, I'm still, like, I fall in touch with everybody, but we might all be young enough to still be fun and get drunk together.
Yes.
So, that might be good.
Yeah, and the exes are fun. At those things, let me tell you. I had one in high school.
I don't care.
I didn't have any girlfriends in high school.
I had one, so I'm ahead of you 1-0. And it was really weird talking with her, but we were very cordial with each other. So.
I had an ex in high school who I don't care to see or talk to ever again.
Well, guess what? I got news for you. What if she's there? What are you going
to
do?
She's not going to talk to me if she's there, and I'm not going to talk to her.
$5, she's super hot also.
Yeah.
She wasn't super hot then.
Well,
so.
She is now.
She's probably super hot now, I guarantee it.
Just for you.
No.
Yeah, I promise you that.
Once you dumped her, she realized she had to get beautiful.
No, she dumped me, and that was for the best, trust me. Once I realized what she was and became, it was for the best.
Oh. Hey, I told you, we hired an intern at one of my networks, and I looked at her, I'm like, she's average. She turns into be a Playboy centerfold that has an alleged affair with Donald Trump. So, I mean, you just never know. Brady, what's coming up on the show? What's going on?
We got lots to get to. What's wrong with David Price? That comes up in a few minutes. We'll talk Kentucky Derby at 4:35. Ben Simmons makes some interesting comments. The Bruins make some adjustments. And we got power play at 5:35. And Arnie, the intern wrote power play.
Oh, jeez. Does that mean it's really dumbed down or really super hard? What does that mean?
Well, we're not sure because Rich and I don't understand the subject matter.
Neither of us have any idea what any of them mean.
So are we? It's Star Wars then. Is that
it's
what,
something
it's
related?
Wow.
Yes, it's something related to Star Wars because it's May 4th, and all the Star Wars fans say May the 4th be with you. And all.
If
that.
It wasn't Star Wars, my second guess would have been sports. So,
Yeah, it's okay to say geeks if you want to.
No, I don't say that because maybe Star Wars fans are our best listeners.
Yeah, I call them all geeks, and of course, I have 7 fantasy baseball teams. So
7 fantasy baseball teams, of which there's Arnie. I will continue to make fun of Rich for this until the end of time. He has 7 fantasy baseball teams, and none of them involve any money. Right. They're all free.
Just crazy.
Well, that's because you have to have money to spend it.
Come on, spend some of that rent money. What are you doing, man? Come on,
spend some rent money.
Yeah. If it's not gambling, because you spent rent money.
I'd rather spend it on beer.
As for
all right, Brady, let's get to the Celtics. Come on, all right. After you're done with that.
Yeah, Celtics win right now. They go up 2-0. They win last night, beating the Sixers 108-103. And, Rich, you and I got ripped on Twitter.
I'm sure I did. What did they say about you?
You and I got ripped on Twitter because they said, I'd love to hear yesterday's show replayed.
Yep.
This game played out exactly like I thought that it needed to for the Celtics to win.
Everything about that game played out like I thought, except for the part where the Celtics come back from a 22-point deficit and actually win the game.
Yeah, but see, the thing is, as I said, what did we say? Break down exactly how we described it.
No,
we said
everything's right except the outcome.
I didn't say the Celtics. I thought the Sixers were going to win, but I also said if the following happens, the Celtics can win. I said,
go either way. How about that?
I said the Sixers were going to come out with a lot of energy and try to get up big early. They did that. Then we said, if the Celtics can keep it close at the end of the first half, because of their second half adjustments, remember, they were outscoring teams by 30-plus points in the second half and overtime. They're a second half team with the adjustments Brad Stevens makes. If they kept it close at the half and they were only down 5, then they had a chance to win. That's exactly how it played out.
But you have to understand what listeners hear is that we're, in my case, picking Philadelphia to win that game. That's all they hear. They don't care about how things played out, what we may have actually gotten right in some of our assumptions. But I know I took Philly to win. I'm taking Philly in 6, and I'm looking really bad on that. Well, I have to stick with it. I mean, I hope like hell it doesn't happen, but I have to. Can I change it now?
No, because then we would rip you for changing it.
Exactly.
So either way, you've got to take your lumps. I got to say this though, before you even mention one name or turnovers or big shots or anything, you start right with Simmons. Are you kidding me? 1 point? Well, he had one more point than I did. He had 1 point and 4. He had 4 shots. What was he doing for 31 minutes out there? I have no idea. You can get 4 shots accidentally in 24 seconds by missing it, grabbing a couple of rebounds and missing. I've never seen a poorer performance out of a superstar in my life. And that goes like a John Starks going 2 of 16 or 2 of 18. At least you shot the ball 18 times. That's like choking. When you shoot the ball 4 times, sooner or later, you've got to start just chucking it up and open banks it or something. What an embarrassment that game was for him.
Ben Simmons, though, is not a jump shooter. And the difference between Ben Simmons and Giannis is not a jump shooter either. And that's what we saw in Series 1. But he was able to control the game with his length, athleticism, and willingness to go to the rim. What Ben Simmons lacked yesterday was that willingness to go to the rim. And he talked about that after the game and said he thought that he was overthinking things too much. He thought he was a little too passive, thought he overanalyzed. Look, if they're going to sag off him, he is not going to take that jump shot. Brad Stevens is daring him to do it. He won't. And the difference, again, between him and Giannis is Giannis will go to the hoop and rattle the rim, whereas Simmons tries to go to the hoop and then kick it back out.
He didn't do any of it, though. He did not. When you shoot 4 times, and I don't have the breakdown on how much he shot per quarter, I'd start chucking it up from full court just to go ahead and get a shot up there.
You do that anyway.
Yeah, I don't care if you're and I think one of them was a three-pointer. I don't know, but you can't. I don't care how much they're daring you and you don't think you have any confidence in your three-point shot. Do something. Charge right into the guy. Throw something up. You can't go with four shots. You just can't do that. That is 100% wrong.
Yeah, go ahead.
The only problem for me was with Simmons is that his game is predicated in driving to the hoop. Just to let you know, Arnie, 31 minutes, 0 for 4 from the field, all from two-pointers. And the key here is that he only had two free-throw attempts.
I mean, but he's a terrible free-throw shooter, too.
And that's my next sentence. I mean, do you think he's getting to the point where he's shying away from the best part of his game, which was driving aggressively and crashing into the hoop because he's so worried about the fact that he can't make a free-throw?
I don't think that plays into it, but I think that you know when you're being dared to take it from the outside, the easiest answer is, well, I'm going to drive, try to draw the defense to where they respect me,
right,
and then kick it out to a wide-open jump shooter. And they're still not shooting that well from the outside. Now, J.J. Redick shot well yesterday,
yes,
especially early, but Dario Saric looks awful right now from deep, and you got the box score in front of you, I think. So what was Saric's actual field goal percentage?
4 for 13.
Yeah,
2 for 6 from beyond the arc.
So they're still not shooting well from the outside.
And Embiid went 8 for 22. I mean, you can't have that. Embiid needs to get inside, bang bodies. I know he likes to take the threes, but he went 1 for 6 from beyond the arc last night. He did have 14 rebounds, but I mean, his defense was the thing that jumped out at me. If you're going to talk about what happened in that second half, especially the third quarter, his defense just disappeared, and then he picked up that fifth foul. And, you know, you're getting all these two-on-ones at the end because he's not able to be in the middle of the action defensively.
And, guys, forget about the 0-for-4 then. Forget about the 1 point. You know, I always like to look at the plus-minus ratio.
Yeah.
Simmons was a minus 23. I mean, McConnell was a plus 16 for Philadelphia. Nobody was even close. He was double of the worst guy in that Philadelphia lineup. At least if you're not going to score and you're not going to shoot, give me some defense, give me some rebounds, give me some assists. I know he had 7 assists. What, 5 rebounds? What are you doing, man? I've got to watch the game again. I wonder if he was just standing in the – I wonder if he was playing like me and just going from three-point line to three-point line. I might have invented something. I don't know what the hell he was doing out there.
And I'll tell you what, going over to the positives with the home team, I mean, Jaylen Brown coming off that bench is like, wow, really? I mean, when I hear the word doubtful, that almost always means no chance.
Right,
and as soon as
right.
he comes off that bench, not only did he come off the bench, he played 25 minutes. He contributed 13 points and 4 rebounds, and he was a huge difference maker because as soon as he came into the game, things turned around.
I was nervous watching Jaylen Brown. Did you see the first dunk that he had?
Yeah.
It looked like he barely got off the ground, and then he was grimacing after. He had another dunk where he came up grimacing. It doesn't look like he's 100%, certainly.
Looked like me on that, getting up there, just barely reaching.
Well, except for the dunk part.
Yeah. Except for the dunk, the make, and the athleticism.
Yes.
He looked exactly like you.
Other than that, though, it was
other
it
than
was
every
right
aspect
there.
Of the play.
Yeah. Make no mistake about it, though, guys. This series is O-V-E-R. It is over. Yeah, it's done. You can go ahead and wrap this thing up. Probably, we have to win on the road. They've not won on the road ever, so we'll see what happens there, or at least this year in the playoffs. But they should be able to wrap this thing up in 5 if they play their cards right.
Celtics are 36-0 in playoff series where they are 2 games, you know, up 2 games to none. Sixers have never won in the reverse at down 0-2.
Okay.
And interesting enough, between the Raptors and between all the series going on right now, in the conference semifinals, underdogs are 5-3. So when you look at what the Cavs have done, they've been underdogs twice.
Yeah.
You look at the Celtics, they've been underdogs twice. And Utah won a game. They were an underdog against Houston.
Yep.
So 5-3 are the underdogs in these conference semis so far.
It's like the NCAA tournament, for crying out loud. So we'll see what happens in game number 3, but I think the series is over. What is wrong with David Price? Do you have like 5 hours? You could start with maybe he's just not very good anymore. We'll get to that coming up next. You're in the huddle right here on 101.3 ESPN.
The huddle is back. I'm sure you missed us. 101.3 ESPN.
All right, good afternoon, everybody. You're in the huddle right here at 101.3 ESPN. my final week here in Los Angeles while the guys back in Vermont. I'll be back on Wednesday, guys. I know you're very excited to get to see me, aren't you?
I can't wait to have the studio be loud and joyful once again.
And I can't wait to hear, you know, for the first hour when we plan for the show, to, you know, about although now that Shea is around a little bit more and he's picked a college. What I mean, it's not quite as severe as it used to be.
No, no, not with coaches calling me up and all that. No,
or the other way around, perhaps.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
What we are going to hear about, though, is you'll be playing basketball again, so we'll hear more about your basketball exploits.
I miss playing basketball. I mean, I kind of like playing down in Venice, though. I talk a lot of smack. I was getting into the one guy throwing some elbows. So
yeah, but those guys are a lot better than you.
No, they're not.
What?
They're not. Some are, but
Venice Beach.
Yeah, yeah.
That's because the real ballers play at the LAY.
Yeah, probably that's true. I'm gonna go with you on that. So that not down in Venice Beach.
The king of the LA basketball street scene.
All right, Brady, get the David Price because I mean, is there any? What a waste of money! I don't know who. What's more of a waste? Put up that poll question: David Price or Dustin Pedroia? Jeez.
So are we just gonna do a show based on all the things I got wrong? Is that what this is gonna be? First the 76ers, Celtics, and now David Price.
I still don't think you're wrong on David Price. I still think he's salvageable, and I still think he'll be very good through the course of the year. But bottom line is David Price. Look, he's tossed 14 scoreless innings to start the season.
Yeah.
Since then, remember he left that Yankee start with that numbness in his finger. He has allowed 20 runs, 17 of which are earned. He's got an ERA of nearly 7. Look, he's walking people. He hit a guy yesterday, and that has been the issue. David Price is getting hit around more, and he's issuing more free passes over the last 3-4 starts.
If he wasn't making the money that he's making...
Oh, don't even say it. Don't even say...
He'd be released.
No.
But he'd be released.
David Price?
He would not be on this team if he was making...
Oh, stop.
Are you serious? You don't think they would have taken him?
You think they would just get rid of David Price if he wasn't making the money? I mean, he's had a couple of bad games.
He's had 5 bad games. The only game that you can count is the Angels, and he walked 4, I believe, in that game against the Angels. And that's a good start. What, are you serious?
No, you can't.
Let me tell you something. If we took a poll right now, how many people, forget about what he was making, how many people want David Price in the lineup as a number 5 starter, I bet you 75% would agree with me and say, get him the hell out of the lineup.
Ooh, talk to me at the end of the season on that one. A number 5 starter
today,
with his history. Look, I understand he stinks right now, but with his history and fairly recent history, if you're going to insert him as the number 5 starter, I'd say your pitching staff's pretty good.
And look, you have to understand that what happened to David Price, especially yesterday, that's what happens to all pitchers when you lose your command. Okay, that is not a David Price's horrible thing. That is just a recipe for pitching disaster. He hits Joey Gallo to lead off the second inning. Those runs come around to score. He walks the leadoff guy in the fourth. Those runs come around to score. When you issue free passes, especially at the leadoff position in the order, that's where it's a recipe for disaster. And, by the way, throw in the fact that Rafael Devers had another error, and throw in the fact that J.D. Martinez had a misplay in left field, and I'm sorry, I know it would have been a great play, but Jackie Bradley Jr. could have very at least kept that ball in front of him on that ball to the gap. I'm not here to make excuses for him, but when you walk a leadoff guy and when you hit a leadoff guy in innings, then bad things that shouldn't happen start to snowball on you, and that's where you get some defensive blunders. And, oh, by the way, Hector Velasquez gave up 3 of his inherited runners, so... That's part of the story, too.
You know, you said you don't want to come up with excuses. Yeah, okay, an error here, an error there. Those things will equal out. But through 5 games, ever since the first 2, I mean, you can't go ahead and just say he's a person of bad luck. It just can't be done. And by the way, if the playoffs started tomorrow, he wouldn't even be on the playoff roster. Forget about it. You're saying about that. He wouldn't even be on the play. Rich.
Again.
He wouldn't even be on the playoff roster.
Put him in the bullpen. Look how good he was coming out of the bullpen last year.
Don't fall for his game.
No, I'm not, I'm saying keep him on the roster, but I'm not sure. I mean, based on what we've seen for the last 4 or 5 starts, do you want to
keep running? That was another outlandish comment by Arnie Spanier.
Wait a minute, don't I get one of those?
No, the only one you have is this.
Rich, please, you're talking too much.
When was David Price at his best? Let's say over the last... beginning of this year and last year.
The first 2 starts where he went 7 scoreless on average each time.
No, the best he was in relief when they needed him. That's when he was pretty much at his best, and that's what he's going to have to go back to. Hey, Town Fair Tire, text line 802-655-6672. But I promise you, if I was running this team, he wouldn't be back in that lineup. And if it weren't for the money, he wouldn't even be back on this team. There's so many. I'd go with a youngster. I'd trade for one. You want to win this division? You want to go for it? You got off a start like this? If you think that you're going to go ahead and drag this guy along as a five starter, it's not going to happen.
I think he's earned the right to have a few more chances. Look, if he goes out there his next two starts and gives up seven runs in the first three innings, I don't think it's because David Price stinks. I think it's because he's injured and he's not telling anybody, and I'm already starting to think that.
I think this is ridiculous. We were going to have a nice and rational conversation about what was wrong with David Price, and you're ready to have him cut. I don't understand.
Well, Tom Fairtire, text line Roger, who I think is the smartest guy in Vermont, says Arnie is right. Going back to last year, Price has been a subpar pitcher at best.
There's a big difference between is he worth the money he's making and I'm ready to cut him and banish him. There's a real big difference there. I think David Price could be a guy who is very good for this team by the time it's all said and done. He's 2-4 right now, so maybe he won't hit the 17-6 that I thought he was going to hit. But he could hit 15-7. He could hit 15-8, especially with this offense that has been playing so well behind him. Yeah, I think he's good. If CC Sabathia can have an ERA under 2, then I'm confident David Price can go out and win 15 games for this team.
Yeah, I said I'd be surprised if he had double digits. I overestimated him. Eight wins if he's lucky, because he's already got 2. And he might not be around long enough to get those starts. And you can him or haw all you want, because I know everybody's agreeing with me on the Town Fair Tire text line. But if you want to win, you got to be deep 1 through 5, and 5 has got to give you a chance to win. And Price isn't giving you a chance to win right now. Glenn in Moncton said Price was at his best in Tampa. You might be, yeah, you're definitely right about
okay,
that.
Okay, that'll give
sure.
you.
That'll give you.
No question about that. Brady, he gets bombed 2 more games in a row, 2 more starts, and he's not hurt, showing no indication of injury. Do you send him to the bullpen?
No.
How many starts in a row before you finally give up on that?
I give 10? Him until at least the middle of June. I mean, I sat and watched. Now, I know we're at different points of his career, but I sat and watched Luis Severino start 0-10 my last year in Albany. And they sent him to the minors, and now he's the best pitcher, one of the best 5 pitchers in the American League. I know we're dealing with a young guy who was inexperienced then, but I'm going to give a guy a couple of bad starts. And I'm sorry, if he doesn't walk the leadoff guy and doesn't hit the leadoff guy, he mowed through that lineup the first inning when he gets the leadoff guy out. If his command comes back, it's not about getting hit hard. It's about his command going sideways a little bit, and he lost control of his changeup the last 2 times. He gets that back, then he gets some variation in his pitch sequencing. He gets the leadoff guy. He didn't get hit all that hard yesterday. A bloop single by Ryan Rua, and you're ready to send him to the bullpen?
No, not yet. No, I'm not saying I'm ready to send. Well, all 3 of us are in a different place here. Arnie says, can him right now, just get rid of him. I'm saying you give him 2 to 3 more blowout starts. If he's average, you keep him around.
Okay, then here's my question for you then. If I'm going to get sucked into this horrible game that you two are playing, are you going to go with Brian Johnson for 25 more starts this year? Are you going to go with Steven Wright, who's been injured and suspended for 25 more starts this year, over David Price? Do you want to go? Breaking news, Matt Harvey just got DFA'd
there you go.
By the Mets for being a clubhouse we don't want to use cancer, so what's the word we're going to say instead of that? For being a
clubhouse pain in the ass?
Yeah, for being a clubhouse knucklehead. Yeah. Refused a minor league assignment. Do you want to go and get Matt Harvey and bring him into your now nice clubhouse?
Where are you putting Pomerantz right now in the rotation? I mean, I know he's been horrible also, but I mean, is he the number 5 starter right now? I mean, I don't know.
It all depends. Once you go one time through the rotation, you lose track of what number is what.
Look, I'm not saying dump him. I'm not saying what Arnie's saying. That's way too drastic. Obviously, you can't dump him anyway.
Right.
I think Arnie understands that. But if he goes out there and gives up 7 or 8 runs again over 2 to 3 straight starts, you can't dump him, but you've got to do something. Do you hold him out for a start, maybe?
If it's really that bad, you put him on the DL and make up an injury.
Okay.
If it's really that bad, before you cut him, you put him on the DL and invent something wrong.
Well, obviously, you're not going to put him. I mean, you're not going to cut him. So I'm fine. I think we found some common ground here in this discussion.
See,
you have to do something to stop the bleeding.
Steve in New Haven, A.S. stay in California.
That would be Arnie Spanier.
Yes, that would be me. And Brady, read the one from a first-time texter because it's kind of long, and I'm not sure I can go from one to the other. So
he goes, really, slow your roll when it suits you. Tell everyone the season's too long to jump on stats. When you think there's a story, you start grabbing it. Let the season play out. So basically, when it's convenient for you, you say the season's too long. And now, in a short sample size, you want to go out and make up a story. So we say, pick what you actually believe.
No, I'll tell you what I believe. I'm trying to win a division. I got the Yankees on my heels. I promise you that if, you know what, all you have to do is figure out something like this. If David Price was on the Yankees and making exactly what he's making here in Boston, how long do you think it would take the Yankees to yank him out of the starting rotation and replace him with either a trade or a youngster? How long?
Again,
you think
uneven comparison. Number one, the Yankees have...
That's a perfect comparison.
The Yankees have a minor league system. The Red Sox don't. And the Yankees
The Red Sox have a better starting staff than the Yankees. That plays into it.
The Yankees have let Sonny Gray go out and be awful every start this season except for one. So they've been letting Sonny Gray do it for an entire year so far.
So then why do you say it's a bad analogy? I think it's a perfect analogy, and I promise you, Sonny Gray won't continue getting those starts if he continues pitching the way he does. Well, you know what? We'll see who gets yanked first, Sonny Gray or David Price. That's a good poll question. We'll see how that plays.
The Yankees have reinforcements to go to at the minor league level if they ever wanted to do something like that. The Red Sox don't. They don't. I'm sorry. And by the way, if you want to continue bagging on Price, then when are you going to take Drew Pomeranz out of the rotation? Because he's had three starts, two of which were horrendous, and one of which was about to be horrendous, with the exception of a grace of a double play he got in the third inning. So are you ready to get him out first or David Price?
Well, let me work it one at a time. I'm working on Price first. I mean, I'm not going to yank both of them out of the lineup at the same time. I got to have somebody that's going to eat innings out there. I can't go ahead and put them both in the bullpen right now.
No,
I mean, I'm not a knucklehead.
I wouldn't yank either of them for a few weeks. You got to hang in with him. Velazquez plays a role in this too, I think. I mean, we haven't talked about him. I really think he is a viable starter at the back end of a rotation for the Red Sox.
He looked great giving up that wild pitch and 3-run homer to a Nomar Mazzara yesterday.
Right.
He looked awesome.
One game. He's been pretty good.
I mean, it
can't be any worse than what Pomeranz and Price have been for the last 3 weeks.
And you're telling me that you've got triple A, double A, single A, you're signing people here and there, people getting traded, and you can't find yourself a pitcher? This is the best you can get?
Yes.
This is the best you're doing?
Yes.
Do you remember last year when they had to go to Doug Fister in July, who hadn't made a start, start all season? That's because last year they didn't have any minor league people. Doug Fister was the savior of the rotation at 34 years old and hadn't made a start in 4 months by the time they got him because they had nobody else. So, yes. The best they could do after David Price and Drew Pomeranz without a trade is Clay Buchholz back on the free agent market, who nobody wants to see, or Brian Johnson, Steven Wright, or Hector Velasquez. So, yeah, I'm taking my chances with Price and Pomeranz for a while.
Wow. Well, somebody's not done a good job leaving the Red Sox cabinet spare. I got to say that.
How about Michael Kopech? I hear, oh, wait, he's with the White Sox now and terrorizing the minor leagues. But, I mean, I'm looking at some of these names on Pawtucket, and there's really... There's really nothing. Jalen Beeks has an ERA under 2, but who the hell's Jalen Beeks?
I'll take it. Sold.
There's not much. Trust me. The cupboard is bare. I mean,
it doesn't make a difference. Give me the lowest ERA and move him up. That's what I need. Give me the lowest ERA, move him up, or make me trade for somebody. Again, you're forcing me. I'm not just being anti-David Price. I'm looking at what he's done. How many more games are you going to get? You want to give him another 5 starts? You want to go 10 starts now where he's going to pitch crappy? You want to go 20 starts? When are you going to be fed up? When's enough going to be enough with you guys? That's what I want to know.
Well, we've made it very clear what enough is enough for me. Yeah. I've said 2 to 3 starts of getting bombed. I'll take if he's average, mediocre, I'll take that. I'll take anything but what's happening over the last 3 starts, but you can't just give up on him right now.
All right, Brady, what do we got coming up next, Brady?
Well, the Kentucky Derby is this Saturday, so that would be tomorrow. So the most exciting 2 minutes in sports, and we've got Barry Abrams of ESPN waiting to talk to us.
Love it. A little Kentucky Derby talk coming up next right here on 101.3 ESPN.
Coming up.
Back to the Huddle, where you can give us your take at 802-655-6672. Providing Arnie shuts up long enough to let you get a sentence in. 101.3 ESPN.
All right, welcome back. You're in the huddle right here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. Look, we know about the staples right now of the sports calendar, baseball in full swing, NHL playoffs, NBA playoffs, and up here we're in tune with all of that, and then the NFL draft just ended. But now, coming up tomorrow, we get one of the biggest days in sports, and it just feels like it sneaks up on me every year. The Kentucky Derby going on tomorrow, Churchill Downs, and it's a wide-open race. Let's go out to the TikTok Jewelers guest line and find ourselves Barry Abrams, who covers horse racing for ESPN. Barry, how are you?
Excellent. It's the best week of the year, with all due respect to Burl Ives in December.
Well, I appreciate you joining us. And look, I used to live in Albany. I used to go up to Saratoga all the time, and it ended up like the old Flintstones mantra, don't bet on the races, because I never won anything. So kind of tell me, as we go into the to looking at horse racing, what's kind of handicapping 101? What should I be looking for?
Well, the first thing is, you have 20 horses in the Kentucky Derby. That is more than any other race in North America. So the number one issue is traffic. It's not the best horse who wins that often. It's the one who gets the best trip and reaches the finish line first. So the first thing you have to ask yourself is, who's going to get the best trip? It could be the favorite. Justify is his name. It was a couple of years ago with Nyquist, named after a hockey player, as you know. Yeah. He had a dream trip and won the race as the favorite, but it doesn't always happen that way. So that's really the number one thing you got to ask yourself, is who's going to get the cleanest trip? And sometimes you just can't plan that till the gate opens.
As a result of that, kind of along that same lines, what about the start position? How much does a horse's start position impact its ability to get out of that traffic?
Well, in this race, it matters a lot. You know, down the road when we get to Belmont, to the Belmont Stakes, probably not as much, because there usually aren't as many horses, and Belmont Park is a much, much bigger track with wider sweeping turns. It is the difference between making a right turn on a local street versus a highway. So there it's probably not as big a deal, but here it's a big deal because you got 20 horses bottlenecking into that first turn. It'll be strung out by the time you get to the final turn. But that's a big issue here. Some horses, and they don't talk, they tell you what they think with their actions. Some horses just do not like being crowded. Some would much rather be in the clear. So, you know, while you look at horses on the far outside from, say, the 19 or 20 post, and you say, well, they obviously have the longest trip around the track, but they're also going to be out in the clear. And sometimes that makes a difference. You know, horse-specific, it's case-specific. That's how they tell you, is by how they run.
You mentioned Justify being the favorite, and we have some very intellectual listeners. We get a text in from Rob on the Town Fair Tire text line, who says, ask Barry, please, what do we make of the fact that Justify has only run against small fields before? Does that impact his ability to win?
That's a very big deal to me. That's a good question. Because that's like basically taking Sam Darnold, putting him on the Jets after 1 year of college and no high school ball. You know, very talented athlete, but he just hasn't been seasoned. Now, if he gets a dream trip, which he might, just as Nyquist did a couple of years ago, it might not make a difference. But, you know, as the former heavyweight boxing champion Mike Tyson used to say, everybody has a plan until he gets punched in the mouth. And this horse really hasn't been. He's had three essentially public workouts that were called races. So what happens when he gets hooked? Is he tough enough? He might be. He might be. But I would need to see it before I think, yeah, he's going to win this race.
And Justify is a Bob Baffert-trained horse. And so we look at some of the big trainers. You look at Bob Baffert, and you look at Chad Brown, historically has had a really good run here in a lot of big races. Are we? Is it that simple when we pick who the winner is going to be? We're looking at trainers first and foremost?
Not necessarily. I mean, there is obviously something to it. I mean, Chad Brown of Mechanicsville, New York, not far from Saratoga, as the trainer of the year, won the Eclipse Award this past year. More known for horses that win races on grass, but he did train the winner of the Preakness last year, Cloud Computing. So he's certainly starting to make a name for himself running horses on dirt, and the Kentucky Derby is, of course, a dirt race. Bob Baffert is an interesting case because one of his close friends is the Olympic ski champion, Bodie Miller. And Bodie is, you know, trying to become a trainer himself. Well, last year, Bodie Miller had a long shot horse in the Kentucky Derby who didn't finish very well. I asked him, why didn't you go in on one of the horses Bob Baffert trains? He's your guy. He named a horse after you, Bodie Meister, who finished second in the Kentucky Derby back in 2012. And this from coming from a champion athlete, Bodie Miller said, I can't play in that end of the pool, meaning money.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's where you need that. There's a reason Bob Baffert gets these horses. You know, if you're going to play in his yard, you better bring a lot of money. Now, that doesn't always mean his horses win, but over the course of time, you know, that usually means he's getting better quality stock.
How does it work with the jockeys? We're talking with Barry Abrams, ESPN horse racing analyst here on the Huddle on 101.3 ESPN. Yeah, how does it work with jockeys? Because we see jockeys, you know, in Saratoga, I'm always looking for the Castellano horse or the Velasquez horse. And one day they're riding this trainer's horse, the next day they're riding that trainer's horse. How do the jockeys pick where who they're going to ride?
Well, they have agents, much like you, because you're a fancy media person. I'm sure you have a big-time agent.
Not now.
And their agents are the ones that are making these relationships with all these trainers. But remember, all these people are independent contractors. So in the races, if you watch today at Churchill Downs and tomorrow on Derby Day, you know, one race, John Velasquez will be riding for trainer Todd Pletcher. The next race, he'll be riding against him. That's just the way it works. You don't necessarily have that mindset when you watch stick and ball sports. But here, everybody's an independent contractor. And, you know, it's happened even in the Kentucky Derby. Not that, you know, happens all the time where you play musical chairs. I mean, back in 2011, John Velasquez was supposed to ride Uncle Mo in the Kentucky Derby, and Robbie Alvarado was supposed to ride Animal Kingdom. Robbie Alvarado breaks his nose on Wednesday. He can't ride. And then the day before the Derby, Uncle Mo comes down with a fever and he has to be scratched. So John Velasquez hops aboard Animal Kingdom for trainer Graham Motion, riding against Todd Pletcher, with whom he's had this 24-year relationship of unparalleled success. And Velasquez beats him in the Kentucky Derby with Animal Kingdom. That's just how it goes.
We'll get you out of here on two more questions. Thought of rain coming in tomorrow in Louisville, and reminds me of the Seinfeld clip. So I've got the Flintstones in one end and the Seinfeld clip in the other, where he goes, his mother was a mutter.
You can never go wrong with that.
No, his mother was a mutter. His father was a mutter. So what happens in the rain tomorrow?
Well, we haven't seen too many of these prep races run on off conditions just by happenstance. There just haven't been many races on the Kentucky Derby trail that have been run in the rain. So it's an absolute unknown for most of these horses, especially the ones in California. They didn't run at all on anything other than a dry, fast track. So there's practically no way, except maybe breeding, to say who has any chance. But even that is an absolute, you know, shooting at ducks in a barrel in the dark. So you can't really worry about the rain until it gets there. Now, last year, Thunder Snow, who was a terrific horse coming over from Europe trying this race on an off track, absolutely freaked when the gate opened. He wanted no part of running on an off track. And he had a terrific year after that running in Europe. But that day on that track, he wanted no part of it. You can't predict that. So there really is no data on which to go with that.
And how about value in this race? Everybody's looking for the long shot. I saw one horse that started at like 80-1. It's now down to like 7-1 or something like that. Where is there a long shot value?
Well, the horse that I think is going to win, depending on whether you consider 8-1 to be long shot, is Bolt D'Oro, whose father was Medaglia D'Oro, meaning gold medal.
Yeah.
And Bolt is named for the sprint champion, the Olympic sprint champion, Usain Bolt. Bolt finished second to Justify in the most recent start, the Santa Anita Derby, and Bolt D'Oro earned a power rating for that race. Every horse in North America earns a power rating for every race that they run. His power rating finishing second would have won every other prep race on the Kentucky Derby trail. I think he has more experience than Justify, which I think will serve him well here, and I think he turns the tables on Justify and wins. Now, if you're looking for bombs away here to try to make some money. There are a few that I think maybe don't win, but could come in for minor awards, like second or third place. Hofberg, who goes from number 9, comes in here for trainer Bill Mott, the winningest trainer in the history of Churchill Downs, but one who doesn't bring that many horses to the Derby. He hasn't run a Derby starter in, I think, 9 years. So even though this horse is very lightly raced, only 3 starts, like Justify, although one of them came last year, I don't discount any horse that Bill Mott brings here. Another one that has a chance, I would say, is right next to him in number 10, and that name is My Boy Jack for the brother tandem of Keith and Kent DeSormo. Again, this horse has been competitive. He'll come from way out of it. And if the pace is fast and the front runners get tired, which they very well could, My Boy Jack will be coming hard at the end and could, depending on the trip he gets, you know, come up for a minor reward. And if you're looking for a real bombs away, and this is just a gut instinct to me, on the far outside, and we were talking about the far outside, is a horse named Combatant for trainer Steve Asmussen, the second leading trainer of all time by Money One. He looked pretty decent in his races in Arkansas, and it seems like almost every year there's this horse that comes out of nowhere to finish second, whether it was Closing Argument in 2005, who finished second at 72-1. There were a couple of 30-1 horses in the last few years that finished second. So if you're looking for one of those on just a hunch, Combatant is one you might want to pay attention to.
Well, you mentioned all the horses. No Gronk, though. No Gronk in the field.
Belmont. He'll be at Belmont.
All right. Well, that's good. But we have no idea what's going to happen tomorrow in the Kentucky Derby, but we know that Barry Abrams is both is all win, place, and show in our book. Barry, we appreciate the time.
Anytime. Thanks so much.
Man, always love getting ready for a little Kentucky Derby. By the way, Barry stole my horse. I was totally going to go with My Boy Jack. 30-1. At least that was the opening odds. I don't know what he is right now. That's what he was earlier. So I'm sure there's going to be somebody coming back on them. But Rich, you're a Kentucky Derby
yes.
guy. You guys
yes.
want to make a prediction or what?
Yes. Let me close my eyes. I have it in front of me. I am taking a horse called, Vino Rosso.
Vito Rosso,
yes.
12-1.
I'm taking Audible.
Audible. I like that one. Where's Audible? I didn't see that one. Oh, 8-1.
Yeah, so not not the favorite, but also not a massive long shot.
But Vino Rosso is a very strong horse, very horsey horse. Great hair.
I'll take Mr. Ed Seabiscuit. And,
he's got a great mane.
Did you read the Top Fair Tire text line, Shane in Burlington?
Yeah.
It says here, Pete Rose once told a story on Levitard's show about he had a horse 6 lengths ahead of the track in Cincinnati when a deer ran out of the woods and derailed his horse.
Sounds like a Simpsons episode.
Oh, I love that, man. That is so funny, man. I think that's hysterical. So there you go. Predictions all around. By the way, if you're a horse racing expert, make us some money. Get on the Town Fair Tire text line, 802-655-6672. Give us Quinella, Trifecta, or what do they call the 4-1?
The Daily O.
The 4 is Quattro. The Superfecta.
Yeah, the Superfecta. There you go.
And is there still a Daily Double?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, of course. Right. And the Pick 6 and all that stuff. So help us out on the Town Fair Tire text line. Brady's going to have a Sports Center update, top of the hour. We'll come back for hour two. Lots to get to on this Friday. You're in the huddle right here on 101.3 ESPN.
Step one, watch sports. Step two, talk about sports. Now, back to the huddle on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, good afternoon, everybody. You are in the huddle right here at 101.3 ESPN. Brady's here, Rich is here, Arnie's here. It's a Friday, hour two of the show. We got Power Play, the new and exciting game, sweeping the country. And, guys, I saw the questions. We might as well give away a thimble. We're going to get a winner right off the bat. I mean, we don't give anything good away because we're going to get a winner. First caller. I mean, I knew like 8 of the 10 questions, guys. That's
I didn't know any of them because I've never...
Oh, stop it!
Neither of us did.
I have never seen Star Wars in my life.
Star Wars.
The questions, but you know what? I love it. They're so easy. I say we get a winner right off the bat. That's never happened since we've played the game in a year and a half, but today that's going to happen. First caller will win the whole thing. That's how easy it is.
Yeah, you know what? If you get kind of one of those Star Wars yahoos that waits in line for 6 hours get a ticket to the midnight showing of something, there is potential that they will get all of them.
Do people – I cannot believe how many people are going around saying, may the 4th be with you. I am so tired of that joke that's been going on for like 5 years.
It's not a joke. It's a real day, though, isn't it?
Well, May 4th is a real day, yes.
No, I mean, but it's like it's a real – you know, like there's Cheesecake Day, Pizza Day. This is like a real Star Wars day, is it not?
Kiss Your Dog Day. I mean, I mean, sure. But I mean, it's just – it's preposterous. I mean, and Brady and I are on the same page, and I guarantee you we're in the minority on this, but we are on the same page. I have never seen 1 second of any Star Wars, and I have no desire to.
Yeah, I have no desire to either. Not because I think that Star Wars fans are weird or anything. I just generally watch television shows more than movies. Yeah. Like, that's why I can quote every episode of Seinfeld, Friends, The Big Bang Theory, because I can watch 4 sitcoms in the time it takes you to watch 1 movie. But I generally just use my time that way. And it's just the way I've always been.
But what I don't understand is, Brady, you see, I understand because you're young. But, Rich, we were young when Star Wars came out. It was like the hottest craze when we were, what, like 12 years old? Everybody was running to the theaters to see Star Wars when we were 12 and 13.
Right, and everybody around me was freaking out about Lost in Space and Star Trek and all the sci-fi-ish kind of stuff up in the heavens and, you know, spaceships and all that stuff. And it just never... I don't know. It just never hit me. I wasn't into that stuff.
I remember I had to do – I mean, look, let's call a spade here. I got a lot of reading assignments in high school. I did not read – I think I read no books in high school all the way through. Like, you know, I'd read a chapter, then ask a friend. Read a chapter and then check
– Cliff Notes.
Yeah. Oh, I would use the – SparkNotes.com. SparkNotes.com was my go-to.
Right.
They once gave me a book to read in about – 9th grade, or they said, choose from this list. And I just went through and said, what's the shortest one on this list? And it was Ender's Game. I don't remember what Ender – it was a sci-fi book. I don't remember who it was by, but I remember it was 96 pages.
Might
have been like 796 pages. There was also Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. There was that one. And 2001 A Space Odyssey. None of those books I had interest in either.
No. Wow. Is Doctor Who up in space too?
I have no.
Is that a space show?
No. Doctor Who, I thought, was a talk show.
Yeah. No, it's not a talk show. He's like, he's not that. But
I just know
it's
HAL
2000. Remember HAL 2000 or something?
I don't know.
That was the
sci-fi. He's a British science fiction television program.
Right. So okay.
It's a TV show.
Okay.
It's okay. I thought it was a talk show, but it's a TV show.
Doctor Who. Our next guest here on the Doctor Who show.
Doctor Oz
That's for sure.
Is a talk guy. By the way, What do Dr. Oz, Bill Belichick, and Johnny Damon have in common?
What do they have?
They are now serving on President Trump's Council on Sports, Fitness, and Nutrition.
Really?
Dr. Oz.
Bill Johnny Belichick? Damon?
Johnny Damon, Bill Belichick, Dr. Oz, and some others, including Misty May Traynor, the Olympic volleyball champion. They are all on the President's Council on Sports, Fitness, and Nutrition, which encourages Americans to live a healthy lifestyle that balances physical activity and good nutrition.
Well, that's been around forever.
Yeah, I think it would have been funny if they had Guerrero on that, too, with Belichick.
So Belichick's on that. Belichick says he made a statement on it, and he said that it aligns with his personal and his foundation's goal and values, and he said that the physical fitness of children in our country is an apolitical issue that is extremely important to our future, said he would have joined this coalition no matter which party or administration had asked him to do it. So Belichick made sure to not align himself so closely with the president, because he's been aligned closely with the president all throughout. I thought it was interesting, though, as he tries to kind of play the neutral line.
All right. I want you to get to, we didn't get to it last hour, get to UVM because the lacrosse is going to be on a little TV, and they're going ahead, what are they, in the quarter or the America East Finals?
Yeah, America East Finals tomorrow at Albany. Albany has spent a decent portion of the year as the number one rated team in the entire country. So UVM, and UVM was blown out by Albany when they played them in the regular season. So they go to Casey Stadium tomorrow. And look, it's a good turnaround for the program for Chris Feist. Whether they win tomorrow or not, it's right. It would be a massive upset if they won. But it's a great, it's great for them at this point to just be there.
You, as a guy from there, will you please explain to me why it is that all 95% of the good college lacrosse programs are all from upstate New York?
Well, that's not true anymore.
It seems that way.
Well, Syracuse has always been good, but they're now they're above average.
All right, but I mean, Johns Hopkins obviously is in Baltimore. I think Duke's always good. So there, I mean, there are some outliers.
No, the entire ACC is good. North Carolina just won a national championship. Virginia's won a title before.
Maryland's
won a title. Okay, although they're in the Big Ten now.
I mean, like my sister went to Hobart, and nobody cared about anything at Hobart except lacrosse. And that's in Central New York.
Well, so number one, lacrosse is the national sport of Canada. People don't realize that it actually is the national sport of Canada over hockey.
Huh.
So when you get the Canadian influence going down into northern New York, that's where you get Syracuse being so good. That's where you get Hobart being Division III in everything and then getting a Division I program. Then you get the Native American influence that's out there in western and central New York. So places like Albany tap into the Onondaga Reservation, the Akwesasne Reservation. They're able to get players from there, so that's where you get players that are good. And then all of Long Island is hockey crazed, so some of those kids filter out, and then some of those kids go down south. So that, I mean, that's where the hockey hotbeds are. It comes down from Canada.
You mean lacrosse?
Lacrosse, yeah. Not hockey. Okay. Yeah. But that's where it comes from.
Wow.
Did I say hockey like five times?
Yes, you did. After the fifth one, I decided I'd correct you.
I meant lacrosse. I got on a roll there.
It's played similarly,
yes,
without the ice.
Well, did you say Syracuse also, Brady?
Yeah, Syracuse used to be great. Oh, yeah. Now they're good, but, I mean, Albany just trounced them in their first game of the year.
Yeah, I just remember going out to my sister's college in Central New York, and it was like, it's all anybody talked about. And they'd have homecoming, and for homecoming, everybody would go to the lacrosse game. Nobody would go to the football game.
Well, lacrosse is a spring sport. Was it a fall sport back then?
You had a choice. It must have been. Maybe they played two seasons. I don't know. Maybe it was just a club match. That's how big it was.
Wow. All right, Brady. I want you to go and play that comment by Ben Simmons. Obviously, he had a stellar game. so he had a lot to say, I'm sure, after the game, now that they're down 2-0. So let's get to that, please.
Which one do you want?
Which one do I want? Play one that I'm really going to rip the crap out of him for. How about that?
Okay. They asked and they said, did the physicality that Boston brought into the game yesterday, did that affect your play?
No. I think first series, they have nothing. You know, the way the Heat played was nothing compared to Celtics. Physically, the Heat, you know, were on another level. But, yeah, I think it was self-inflicted for myself, personally for my own game. And team-wise, I think mentally we made too many errors when we had that lead, and we need to stay on it.
Hmm. I wish you would stop saying we. It was really him. And I wouldn't start bellowing that they weren't physical, but you got four shots off. I don't know how you not only get four shots off when they're leaving you wide open. So you really have no confidence in your outside jumper. You've got to create something. That was about the worst game I've seen a superstar play in the playoffs in my entire life.
That doesn't bother me that he said that, though, because I don't think of it. When I think of the Celtics, I don't think of them as being overtly physical. Do you, Rich? I think of them being well-coached. I think of them being schematically driven. I think of them being shifty and having a cerebral knowledge of defense. Now, when I think of Aaron Baines, I think of a bruiser, but Aaron Baines isn't guarding Ben Simmons. The only one I could think of is Marcus Smart being physical on the defensive end, but generally I see the Celtics as a rotation-driven, cerebral team.
I would add Morris to that list. He's a bit of a bruiser with an attitude.
But he's not going to guard the point guard.
No, but by the time the point guard gets into the paint, he's probably going to get smacked around a little bit. I don't know. Now the question, of course, to me becomes, do you use T.J. McConnell a little bit more in Game 3 if Simmons' troubles continue early in that game? I mean, McConnell came in and absolutely got it done.
I know down 2-0 you don't rock the boat too much, but I'd love to see Markelle Fultz play in this series at all. I mean,
what's up with that?
I mean, and Brett Brown has said, Arnie, like you said, dance with who got you here, and Markelle Fultz wasn't in this rotation most of the year. He only played 13 games, sat out the last four full postseason games. You're not going to give him his first playoff real action when you're down two games to none, but I'd love to see him in and see what he could do.
But the key here is 0 minutes. I mean, why don't you give him a minute or two, acclimate him to being on the court in a playoff situation? I'm not asking you to play him for 34 minutes. Just take him off the bench. He's the number one pick. He's had a triple-double or two during the regular season. At least give him something.
Well, that's why I said, why didn't he play in game number one at the end when he was emptying out the bench and people were getting 2, 3, 4, 5 minutes? I go, at least get him into the game. Let him get the butterflies out. Let him play in a playoff game. Let him mentally know, I've already been in a playoff game. I've already got that done. Let's move on from there. Now, it's the first time he comes in, it's going to still be his first playoff game. He's going to have the butterflies. I don't understand the thinking of some of these coaches. I don't know what I would have done wrong in game one to just stick him there at the end. I think that's crazy.
Well, I think we're seeing I think we're seeing Brad Stevens fully outcoach Brett Brown right now. And I think we assumed that Brad Stevens was a great coach. Yeah. But, I mean, the Celtics erased a 22-point deficit down to 4 in the span of 3 minutes yesterday before the half. And Brett Brown didn't call one timeout to try to get the kind of recreate the equilibrium. He didn't do that. Fultz hasn't played at all. Then you see the pick and rolls that Stevens is employing that's got Al Horford all sorts of advantages over Joel Embiid. We're seeing a clinic right now from Brad Stevens.
By the way, I'll tell you when you call time, when it goes from 22 to 16, you know, even though it's only 6, you stop the run, you say, okay, let's stop it right now. You know, before a water leak becomes something real serious, let's go ahead and fix it now. Then when it goes from 6 to under double digits, that's the next timeout. Say, hey, okay, boys, you're making it hard on yourself now. Now we've gone from 22 to 9. We better start doing something. That's the second timeout. The third timeout's when the game's tied or you've lost the lead. So that's what happens there, and he didn't do any of that.
The other concern I have, too, is the locker room atmosphere after the game, post-game for the 76ers. To a man, almost every one of them, including Simmons, says, oh, well, it happens. We're going home now. We'll be okay. And I understand the NBA home winning percentage is the highest of any sport by quite a bit. But I don't know. It just felt very dismissive to reporters to just say, oh, well, we're heading home. No big deal. I'm sure we'll win both games. I mean, you split that and you're done.
Well, Rich, I agree with you that you'd like to see a little more urgency with them. But also, again, what are you going to say? You're going to say, yeah, we got thoroughly outplayed and now we're worried our season's over. So, again, I think that's the attitude you have to say, even if privately you are worried.
I just think that you should. Yeah, I mean, obviously you want to admit to the fact that you just lost two games to a team that's missing half their lineup. I mean, obviously it's not half, but I don't know. Just come out with a little bit more intensity in the locker room and just say, yeah, they got us. It's time to get home and let's come out and play with our hair on fire. I know I'm the only person that ever says that, but you never know.
Arnie,
I wanted you to play the Tim Legler cut about what he said about Simmons, because, again, he's getting it from all angles about his play yesterday or his play with the 1 point.
Part of the reason I think is because they're still a pretty young team with their decision makers. Okay. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. And I think there are times, as great as Ben Simmons has been at 6'10 playing the point, there are times when you go, man, it'd be nice if they had a true point guard that has been a point his whole life to manage certain situations. And I think that contributes to that.
Amen to that. I totally agree with that. And that's why I didn't expect Philadelphia to go past Boston anyway. And this is not even a great Boston team. Philadelphia is not as great as people are making them out to be, that's for sure.
Arnie, do you think it's an acceptable excuse at this point of the season to say that the Sixers are young? Because I saw the argument where Doug Gottlieb was saying today, yes, they're young, but remember the Celtics are young. I mean, Terry Rozier was the third point guard on this team when the season started. Jaylen Brown played, you know, averaged 5 points a game in the playoffs last year and barely played in round one. Tatum is a rookie. Is it fair to use the youth as an excuse for the Sixers, because that youth exists for the Celtics also?
Yeah, no, it's not fair at all. It's ridiculous. It's kind of like saying the Simmons a rookie or he's not a rookie. Technically, as far as I'm concerned, he's not a rookie, but I understand by the NBA rules. And no, these guys, I mean, they weren't young when they were winning 17 games in a row now, were they, Brady, huh? They weren't feeling young and inexperienced when they were running off all those wins in a row. So I think that's just an excuse now that they've hit better teams in the playoffs.
I mean, I do think it's fair to a degree. You look at the Celtics and remind yourself, Al Horford's been in the playoffs a bunch of years. He can help right the ship if things are going sour. He also was a multi-year player in college and won two national championships at Florida, if I'm not mistaken. Brad Stevens has coached in the playoffs multiple years and has coached in a national championship game in college. You look at that Sixers team, and who do they really have that's been through the battles before? J.J. Redick's been relatively deep in the playoffs with the Clippers. But other than that, that is about
it. He went to a championship.
At Duke.
No, J.J. Redick played for an – didn't he play for an NBA championship?
No, he's played – well, I believe he's played with Orlando and the Clippers, and I want to say that's it.
Well, I was wrong on that.
So, but the thing is we could talk about how young the Sixers are, but where was that in the last series? And I understand the Celtics are a little bit better, even banged up than the Miami Heat probably. But, I mean, Simmons averaged almost just missed a double-double average in that first series, a playoff series. And Embiid averaged whatever it was, 30 and 15 in the Miami series. So there's your playoff experience. I know it's not much, but you've got some, and they clearly weren't. They weren't distracted by the fact that they're very young and they're now playing in their first playoff round.
By the way, Boston has to get at least one, make it 3-1, or even finish this off, because you know Cleveland's going to win theirs in about 4 or 5. I hate to look ahead, but that's exactly what's going to happen. It's going to be Boston and Cleveland. It's going to be a great Eastern Conference Finals. Definitely looking forward to it.
And with that in mind, can we please, and I've said this 100 times on the show over the last 8 years, just sit back and enjoy what LeBron James is. I mean, I'm so sick of all the criticism. If you didn't see that game last night and what he has done for the last 2 or 3 weeks, I just urge you to just watch. It's pure magic.
He had 15 points off fadeaway jumpers alone yesterday in the second half. His second half yesterday was impressive. Now, you can say he didn't pass the ball enough. You can say he didn't use his teammates enough. But
he had 14 assists.
I know, but Russell Westbrook gets 14 assists, and people still want to call him a chucker and a ball hog. So I think LeBron is being a little too much. I'm going to take the game over and ask for no help. But what he did yesterday, it was cold-blooded in the fourth.
And Kevin Love, if he's going to do that, look out.
Yeah. Kevin Love. Jeez, we had a Kevin Love sighting. That's fantastic. Yeah.
I'll say 31 points and 11 rebounds, Kevin Love sighting.
Big time. All right, we got Power Play, the new and exciting game, sweeping the country, coming up in about 20 minutes from now, so stick around for that. Though, we got to get to the Bruins. Are they going to even things up? We got a few more things to get to with the Red Sox. All that's coming up next. You're in the huddle right here on 101.3 ESPN.
Lines are now open. Get ready to call in at 802-655-6672. This is The Huddle with Rich, Arnie, and Brady on 101.3 ESPN.
Let's go! All right, good afternoon, everybody. You are in The Huddle right here, 101.3 ESPN. It's a Friday. Coming up next, remember, about 20 minutes away from Power Play, the new and exciting game sweeping the country. I'm real curious to see how everybody's going to do on this one. If you're a Star Wars guy, I'll give you the three possible answers. Han Solo, Chewbacca, or neither. Han Solo, Chewbacca. By the way, isn't it Hans, H-A-N-S?
No, it's Han Solo.
Okay. Han Solo,
is that one
Chewbacca,
word?
Or neither. No. This might be the first time one of you two guys gets a question wrong.
Now, is Han Solo in relation to Hope Solo?
No.
Yes.
Okay.
Brother, sister.
Okay.
Yes, I think that is. Brother, sister, Brady. You screwed that one up, didn't you?
Maybe that's one of the questions.
I don't think so.
That was question four, for crying out loud. First-time texter, Brady, never watching Star Wars is like never eating apple pie or playing baseball. You are not a real American.
Wow. You know how he conveniently leaves me out of that, even though I said the exact same thing? I'm bulletproof, baby.
I've eaten apple pie and picked up a baseball, so I'm good.
Once or twice.
Well, but you didn't see Star Wars. I'm going to have to agree with the first-time texter there.
Of course.
Well, why don't the three of us just get together sometime? We'll have like an RJ's Star Wars marathon. Ugh.
Aren't there like 100 of them? And aren't they all
like
7
six,
hours?
But all you have to really see is number one, which is like number three.
How many are
don't
there?
Even
seven?
Get me started on that. Don't,
eight.
Don't get me started on that. All right, someone get me going on the Bruins. What are the numbers? Crunch the numbers for me, Brady, because they're down 2-1. How badly do they need this one?
Well, teams leading 2-1 at a best of 7 go on to win the series 70% of the time. So right now, the Bruins already have their backs up against the wall. What's good for them, though, is the Lightning. Get this. They have only won consecutive games in Boston one other time before. 54 total games, only once have the Lightning won consecutive games in Boston. So the momentum for the series is in the Lightning's court, but the momentum for history is with the Bruins.
I'm going to go all Arnie here. I've learned from the master of making guaranteed picks and almost always being wrong, but I am feeling so good about tonight. I can't wait for the puck to drop. There is no way. We rolling tape? My name is Rich Haskell, and there is no way the Bruins are losing this game tonight.
Wow.
No chance.
Now, they are adding Ryan Donato to the lineup today. That is official. Bruce Cassidy hadn't said as of when we were show planning what line he was going to play on. Now, there was also some thought. Now, Brad Marchand and Jake DeBrusk both beaten up a little bit. I would expect them both to play, but I guess there's a side chance that one of them couldn't, but... Do you think Donato playing is a big deal for this night?
Could somebody please explain to me? And I haven't doubted anything Bruce Cassidy has done this year. I mean, he has just worked magic with his team, who that we saw was, you know, everybody's too young. Let's hope for an eighth place, maybe a first-round playoff, and then bye-bye. What he's done with his team is unbelievable, and the kids have improved. But why in the world Ryan Donato has not stepped on the ice for 20 days, I should say, is a complete mystery to me. He comes out... scores 3 points in his first game. I think he was 5-4-9 in 12 regular season games. And now that the offense has been struggling in this series, hello, it's about time.
Yeah, but he's not a savior, guys. Don't expect him to rookie to come in and be the savior. He's just got to be another piece to the puzzle. I mean, look, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure this out. If the first line's not doing it, that's the Bruins are going to go down. They've got to pick it up, and they don't have to do all the scoring, but they've got to make it a little bit easier on everybody else.
Well, that's my point is Donato's not going to be expected to be on the first line. He'll probably play on the power play if they can get a few of them tonight, but... you've got to sprinkle in some sort of offensive threats in the second, third, and certainly in the fourth line. And if you have an opportunity to do that, he's just sitting around not even dressing. You might as well address the problem.
And has the offense been the overwhelming issue, or has it been the defense and the turnovers that has then led to some offensive issues? If you're playing the game in your own end a lot and then you're turning it over in your own end, isn't that the bigger issue right now? Look, I'm for getting Donato on the ice. I like Donato. We saw what he did in the Olympics. He played well early on. So I'm okay with him playing. But has the offense been the overwhelming issue, or has it been Tuca at times / turnovers and sloppiness?
To me, it's been sloppiness, i.e. turnovers.
Yeah.
I'll put that into one deal. But also penalties. They're not necessarily Tampa. Believe it or not, with that first line, you know, great first line and great power play all year long, hasn't really done a lot on the power play. But the problem is they continue to shoot themselves in the foot. You talk about the lack of offense. To me, so much of it is because they're playing shorthanded for 10 minutes at least in every game.
Well, you know what? That's a good point too. Though they need to, they've had scoring opportunities. They just haven't cashed in. They've cashed in on a few when they had the six goal game, and all that stuff. But if you check the stats, I think they've had more scoring opportunities than Tampa. I could be wrong, but I think that's true. So when you're having the scoring opportunities, it's like a bad shooting night in the NBA. Eventually, the puck will start going into the net. At least I think they will. I could be wrong, but I think that will happen.
You know, there's been a lot made of – so yesterday we talked about Patrice Bergeron getting thrown out of the faceoff circle being another subplot to watch. A lot made of the Lightning and the way that they use their forecheck and the way they go after the puck, generally sending two guys rushing at the puck rather than one. So if you can control the puck and break out of that quickly, out of that kind of trap that they run, well, then you're going to have some openings in the slot and other places. But right now they just haven't been able to get – you know, they haven't been able to take advantage of that because the Lightning's forecheck's been real quick and real aggressive.
And is that as simple as just recognition of the problem and going to practice the next day and saying, all right, here's how we solve it? Is it that easy?
I think they would have already figured that out. I think when you have speed and aggression and if they're going to tie you up in the corner and get the puck out, then you're helpless at that point. What it needs to take is you just need to be quicker to the puck and make a better decision quick.
Well,
I want to know. Do they? I asked you the same question last game, so I'll ask you again. Do you want to come out and become aggressive and try to get those early scoring opportunities like they did when they had 10 in a row, or do you want to start hitting them like a ton of bricks and saying, "Okay, we're really going to belch around and see what they do with physicality"? Which one do you want to go?
Well, you better be careful with physicality because you don't want to give up a couple of power play opportunities early. This is a game for the Bruins, especially. They've got to score the first goal.
Yeah, I think the Bruins need to come out, Arnie, and just be ultra aggressive on offense, not ultra aggressive in terms of physicality. I think when you look at the way the Bruins are built, that first line is a scoring line. They need to be a scoring line again, not a bruising line, in my opinion.
No, they have to hit people, though. I'm not going to go ahead and, you know, try to finesse this. You're down 2-1. You better be able to start hitting people into the boards and you know, knocking some heads around. Otherwise, you're going to make it real easy on Tampa because they'll go ahead and finesse you to death. They'll take it, and if they're going to, they'll come right up the ice if nobody's going to lay a finger on them. You got to hit them and make sure they're going to feel that. You
well,
know that.
That's, I don't mean to black and white it, but I'd rather outscore them and outhit them. But, I mean, obviously, obviously playing an aggressive style can lead to that, but you've got to be careful. You got to show some discipline and not give them in more power plays. I mean, if they out-hit them 26-15 and lose 4-1, it doesn't do you a whole lot of good.
I'm with you, Rich. I'm going with the Bruins in game number 4. I think they even this thing up, and we'll have a great series of best of 3 after that. It'll be 2 apiece. See how that plays out. Brady, what did you want to say about Chris Sale?
Yeah, so MLB.com did this really cool thing where they looked at what is the best pitch in each division. So what are the best pitch? The first they did, what's the best pitch on each team, and then what's the best pitch in each division? And they said that Chris Sale's slider is the best pitch on the Red Sox. And they said, I mean, look, last year you look at it, he had 308 strikeouts, 134 of them came on that sweeping slider. Look, his slider's incredible, but I still think Craig Kimbrell's curveball is the best, is the most devastating pitch the Red Sox have to offer.
Yeah, and we just see so much less of Kim. I mean, Sale goes out there and throws, you know, 100 pitches every time he goes out there. But you're right, because I think in Kimbrell's case, everybody's waiting for the gas or the cheese, as Eck would say. They're expecting that 98 mile an hour on the corner fastball, and he'll just, you know, sail one in there at 80 miles an hour, and it breaks across the plate, and you're completely crossed up as far as your balance.
No, but why isn't a closer 100-mile-an-hour fastball, why isn't that the best pitch? Why isn't somebody where you can't touch their fastball and it's going to be a strike 80% of the time not the best pitch?
Well, Aroldis Chapman's fastball was the best pitch for the Yankees. Okay. They listed that the best. No one else in the division. Zach Britton of the Orioles, his sinker was listed as their best pitcher, as their best pitch. So you talk about some closers' fastballs. Those were there, but I think Kimbrell's curveball is just absolutely devastating.
Especially when you set it up with 300 mile an hours in a row. But the thing about Kimbrell is, I mean, when you talk about a guy like Chapman, the reason that's a devastating pitch is every one of them is 103 miles an hour. But in this day and age, when Kimbrell's throwing that 97 mile an hour pitch, especially the younger players are catching up to it. The league is catching up to that kind of velocity.
Brady, if you had to guess, which pitcher makes you swing and miss the most? In baseball,
I mean it's got to be a starter because they got to throw a higher number of pitches. Well, I want to say, well, look, yesterday I know for a fact the other day James Paxton for the Mariners had 30 swings and misses in a 16 strikeout performance, and the closest number to that was Noah Syndergaard and Shohei Ohtani, each had 25. So I guess I would say, if we're looking at it on a season long basis, I would say Noah Syndergaard would be the highest.
Verlander has to be up there.
I'll say Syndergaard, if he stays healthy, is the most swings and misses all year.
Well, that's going to be – you got to have a lot of junk with that too then, though. You know what
Absolutely.
I mean? You can't be just – yeah.
Deception.
That's all it is. It's what, 25 swings and misses? That doesn't seem like a whole heck of a lot. I thought you were going to say like 60 or something
In
that.
One game, you're talking about 100 pitches and 25 of them are completely swung and missed. That's a huge number. How many are taken for strikes? How many are fouled off? How many are balls?
How many are put
in play?
Yeah, yeah.
Kershaw.
Yeah. That was what I was thinking, too.
Scherzer.
Clayton Kershaw, yeah.
I mean, these guys, constant Strasburg to a point, and they're constantly double. I mean, look at Sale. He had over 300 strikeouts last year. He has to be on that list.
Really?
I mean, why do you think they're hitting him, but he's still striking out 12 guys every game?
Well,
I mean, there must be a lot of swings and misses.
Also get a lot of pitches looking. I'll have this answer by the time we come back.
Nolan Ryan, I mean, geez. I mean,
got news for you, Arnie. He hasn't pitched.
Not playing anymore?
Last time I checked.
Yeah, that's a good trade. Thank goodness we got him off the Mets at a very early age.
He was pitching back when Star Wars was big.
Yeah, there you go. All right, coming up next, we got Power Play, the new and exciting game sweeping the country, and we dumbed it down because we had the intern write it. The intern, because we don't know what the hell we're talking about, because it's on Star Wars. Han Solo, Chewbacca, or neither. Han Solo, Chewbacca, or neither. So if you're a Star Wars fan,
geek,
you already have won. And Brady's going to pull some great stuff out of the prize vault. Start calling now. 802-655-6672. That's 802-655-6672. Power Play, the new and exciting game sweep of the country. Coming up next, right here on 101.3 ESPN.
Coming up on Sports Saturday at 10:20.
Thank you for making us a part of your afternoon routine. People of planet Earth, we appreciate you. The Huddle is back right here on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, good afternoon, everybody. You are in the Huddle right here at 101.3 ESPN. It's time for Power Play, the new and exciting game sweeping the country. Let me tell you how we play the game. We ask you a question. You get that question wrong, you'll hear this. And we move on. If you go, wait a minute, you're going too fast, we don't care, you'll still hear this. And we move on. If you go, wait a minute, you guys botched question six, you're probably right, we
six?
Don't care. Well, six doesn't make a difference. Yeah, I mixed it up today. You'll hear this. And we move on. If you get a question right, we'll ask you another. If you get all 10 questions right, Brady, you got something good from the prize vault, or you haven't had a chance to go back there yet?
I'll wrangle something up.
Okay, so you'll get something from the 101.3 ESPN prize vault. The three possible answers, Han Solo, Chewbacca, or neither. Han Solo, Chewbacca, or neither. So,
are you going to let us tell you the answer real quick, by the way, to the swinging strikes? Can I tell you that since we found
it?
Yeah, sure.
Go ahead.
So it was Patrick Corbin of the Diamondbacks was number one at the moment this year. Otani's number two. Jacob DeGrom is up there as well with Max Scherzer and Garrett Cole.
Because people on the Top Fair Tire text line say Liriano, and then throwing in all kinds of texts out there. So, yes, we had to get that out there. People were interested in that one. All right, Brady, if I said to you, Han Solo, Chewbacca, or neither, if I said this one is tall and hairy, you would say?
Chewbacca, I think.
Oh, very good. You're still good at this game, Brady. You're still good. Rich, if I said to you, this guy's not tall and hairy, you would say?
The other one.
Han Solo.
Han
you're
Solo.
Very good, at,
Hope
very
Solo.
Good
yeah.
at this one. And if I said to you, Brady, also played for the Dodgers, you would say?
Neither.
There you go.
Should have been Mr. Ed. Didn't Mr. Ed play for the Dodgers?
That's great.
I don't know. There you go. Are there people that are going to play this? We've made it especially for the Star Wars geeks out there. Are there people lined up to play this, Brady, or what?
We do. We got Court and Colchester.
Well, you better get all the lines filled for crying out loud. 802-655-6672. That's 802-655-6672. If you're a Star Wars geek, you're going to get all the answers right off the bat. So without further ado, it is time for Power Play. Wow.
Nice.
You know, we try to have a little fun, and we have no Star Wars geeks. Who's first up ready? Court
and Colchester.
Court and Colchester. Court, are you ready for Power Play?
I'm ready.
What are the three answers, Court?
Han Solo, Chewbacca, or neither.
Are you a Star Wars fan?
A little bit, yeah.
A little bit. Yeah, confidence level just plummeted. Here we go. Who is older?
Chewbacca.
Can use the Force?
Neither.
Fought during the Clone Wars?
Chewbacca.
Here we go.
Was frozen in carbonite.
Han Solo.
Well, I told you it was going to be easy.
And there's no hesitation.
No. Has met Master Yoda.
Chewbacca.
Oh, no.
Which one has used a lightsaber?
Han Solo.
He's going to get it all right. He's going to get it all right.
This is great.
Question seven. Had their character portrayed by actor Anthony Daniels?
Neither.
Wow.
Number eight. During the first draft of Star Wars, this character was supposed to be green.
Neither.
No!
Oh,
I thought for sure he was going to get them all right.
And so meanwhile, he's now set the table for everybody after him.
He got seven questions right, and now you know which one he got wrong on number eight.
Well, so the deal is our winner has to give half the prize to Court.
Yes, you got to. Oh my goodness!
That's impressive.
Well, you got to fill those lines again, Arnie. Otherwise, we could talk more about Craig Kimbrell's curveball if you want.
I can't believe they're not filled. 802-655-6672 after giving all those answers. He was a little stumped on the first one on who's older. But after that, he was just cruising right along like I was asking him third grade math or something like that. 2 + 2. He was crushing it. Hey, you know, we might not have a lot of Star Wars geeks out there. Even after they heard all the answers, they're a little confused. But he said he was only a slight Star Wars fan.
We got Dave.
All right, Dave in Burlington. Dave, are you ready for PowerPoint?
You don't know that he's in Burlington. Dave, are you?
I guessed. Where are you, Dave?
Williston.
You see, I thought I had the Force. Oh, look at me. Look at me.
Wow.
Yeah, wow.
I think
Dave,
that's
what are the
Star
three
Wars reference.
I know. That's so good. Dave, what are the three possible answers?
Chewbacca, Han Solo, or neither.
Yeah, confidence level real low right now because he's talking to me on the speakerphone. Are you a Star Wars fan, Dave?
No.
Oh, my goodness.
He'll probably win.
All right, here we go. Han Solo, Chewbacca, or neither. Can use the Force.
Neither.
Who is older?
Chewbacca.
Fought during the Clone Wars.
Chewbacca.
Has met Master Yoda.
Chewbacca.
Was frozen in carbonite.
Han Solo.
Which one used a lightsaber?
Han Solo.
Had their character portrayed by actor Anthony Daniels.
Neither.
Question 8. During the first draft of Star Wars, this character was supposed to be green.
Chewbacca.
The same one wrong?
Well, at least we know what the answer to number 8 is.
That's
okay. You know what, Dave? Yeah. Was totally mooching off of court right there.
Yeah,
he's sitting there writing court's answers down.
I didn't feel good about that one. I didn't feel good. You had a 33% chance, Dave, of the first one getting. Now, he had a 50% chance of getting it right, and he got it wrong.
So you already have a clear path to the first 8 answers. So give us a call.
I don't know if we should take another one. 802-655-6672. This one was way. He knew nothing about Star Wars.
Geek.
Elliot in Burlington.
Elliot in Burlington, are you a Star Wars fan?
Hey, fellas, I sure am.
Elliot's going to win.
Oh, Elliot's going to win.
Let's see how we do.
Oh, yeah.
You already know the first eight.
Yeah. What are the three answers, Elliot?
Han Solo, Chewbacca, or neither.
We got a winner. Here we go.
That's it.
I feel confident. I bet my job that we're going to have a winner.
Elliot, please. Do it.
Well, if you bet your job, then I think you know what I might choose, Arnie.
Yeah, here we go. Don't tank like Philadelphia. All right, here we go. Who is older?
Chewbacca.
Can use the Force?
Neither.
He's taking a long time. Was frozen in carbonite?
Han.
Fought during the Clone Wars?
Chewbacca.
Oh, he's got a ringer in the car with him.
Yeah, somebody's giving you the answer. Yeah. Has met Master Yoda.
Chewbacca.
Which one has used a green lightsaber? Or used a lightsaber, excuse me.
Han. Cutting open a tauntaun on Hoth.
Wow.
Whatever.
He's even
had their character portrayed by actor Anthony Daniels.
Chewbacca carried...
No, he got it wrong!
That was one of the already answered.
Oh, my goodness!
It's because that three-year-old in the seat next to him is giving him bad info.
Yeah, blame it on him. Oh. I'd blame it on him. That's it? We can't get to any more?
After all that
build-up. Yeah, we can't get to any more.
Oh, wow. You guys choke.
How about that? The first guy gets 7 of the 10, and we can't get a winner.
You guys choked. That was a choke.
That's the Toronto Raptors.
I don't like that.
Right
there, I don't like to use that. Yeah, I don't like to use the word choke a lot, but our listeners choked.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry to put it that way.
At least 2 of them did.
Yeah, well, that's true. All right, here we go. Who is older? Chewbacca, you have any ages on that, Brady? Oh, you didn't write
it. I didn't write these questions.
That's right. Can use the Force, neither. I know what that means. Fought during the Clone Wars, Chewbacca. I'm going to take your word on that. Was frozen in carbonite, Han Solo. I knew that one. Has met Master Yoda, Chewbacca did. Has used a lightsaber, that's Han Solo. Says he used Luke's blue lightsaber on Hoth.
Hoth?
You know what that means?
I don't know. Is that a planet or something?
Yes, it is, according to our geek.
No, it's the way people dress.
I mean that in a positive black. Way.
Oh, wait, that's Goth. That's Goth. That's my bad. Had their character portrayed by actor Anthony Daniels. Neither. What is that? Well, I don't understand that. Anthony Daniels, help me here. Does anybody know what's there? No?
I don't know.
During the first
I think it just means who's the actor that plays the character.
I understand that, but I mean, is Anthony Daniels playing? I don't know. During the first draft of Star Wars, this character was supposed to be green. That's Han Solo. Two that you never got to was born on the same planet the Millennium Falcon was made. Who doesn't know that's Han Solo?
Of course.
And was the original owner of the Millennium Falcon. Neither, of course. Everybody knows that. Of course, there. So, there you go. You guys choked away Power Play, the new and exciting game sweeping the country. Last story standing, we'll give you the mistake of the day. Plus, last story standing, it is a good one. Wait till you hear this. All that's coming up next right here on 101.3 ESPN.
Coming up on...
It's time for one last piece of news gone untouched throughout the show. Wacky or insightful? It's time for Last Story Standing on the Huddle on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, let's go ahead and give you the mistake of the day. The winner for the week will go to Jake in Williston. Jake in Williston, mistake of the day, brought to you by Embroidery Works at Joanne Judiform in Colchester, helping small businesses with screen printing, embroidery, and vehicle lettering to get it right the first time. Thanks to Embroidery Works at Joanne's Uniform for the mistake of the day. All right, great last story standing. You'll love this. Have you ever hated somebody so much that you got a tattoo to remind you how much you hated them? That's what one Bronco fan did. He got a FYTB tattoo right underneath the Eagles logo. Do you know what FYTB stands for?
I think we can figure that out, can't we?
Blank you, Tom Brady. Blank you, Tom Brady. And it's right under a Philadelphia Eagles logo. I am looking at the tattoo. It's on his right above his knee and very visible. It's a nice tattoo, but I don't know if I'd be getting that just to say how much I hate them. I hope he lost the bet or something.
Real interesting. Did you see that on a Bleacher Report by any chance?
No, this one's off. It's all over but I'm reading a story off of NFL something or other. Why?
Because I think the guy who tweeted out that picture came from 104.3 The Fan in Denver. That's my old coworker in Albany.
Oh, how funny.
I'm surprised he didn't put it on his butt just to make, even more effect.
Yeah, exactly. All right, guys, have a great weekend.
You too.
Champlain Valley game night coming up next. I'll be back on Wednesday. We still got a couple more days to do from Los Angeles. For Brady, Rich, I'm Arnie. Champlain Valley game night next right here on 101.3 ESPN.
They're hiring warehouse workers starting at $13.50 an hour with tons of overtime available. That's Tamra. Apply online at Indeed.com. Champlain Valley Game Night is next on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3 ESPN.com and always on the 101.3 ESPN app.